episode of the Kingston Live podcast is brought to you by Grand Onstage. Get the most out of the Kingston Grand Theater experience with access to pre-sale tickets, the best prices, and the best performances and subscriptions for the Grand Onstage season are on sale now at kingstongrand.ca.
Every year, the summer festival season brings Kingston to life. Returning favorites like Skeleton Park Arts Fest, Back to the Farm, and YGK Craft Beer Fest pull and fill the city with activity. But one festival has been missing for the last few years. In 2023, the city hosted its final Limestone City Blues Festival, closing out its 26-year run. And though there's been no shortage of music in town since, Bluesfest left a void in the scene. However, this year, a true successor has arrived. At the end of the summer, Road Trip Music Festival, a single-day festival featuring stages across Princess Street and Market Square. Sounds familiar, but one look at the lineup, the names run a variety of genres, R&B and country, hosting local favorites like Piner, Cassidor, and Tiny Horse, alongside established artists like Gabriel Jacoby and Peach Pit. And some of that credit is owed to our guest today.
It's part from Virgin, my belief, that are not as narrow in their tastes as media wants them to be so that they can advertise to them directly. We don't see music audiences a demographic. We see them as people who have diverse beliefs, values, tastes, experiences, and are super curious about things that they may not be familiar with.
Steve Jordan has worn many hats over the years in the Canadian music industry. He's worked jobs ranging from publicity and radio management. And in 2006, he started the Polaris Music Prize, an annual award given to an exceptional record by a Canadian artist. So when downtown Kingston was looking for some festival, recruiting Steve was a no-brainer. We're sitting down with Steve to talk about his own history with Kingston, the Polaris Music Prize, and what you can look forward to at the inaugural Road Trip Music Festival.
Kingston Live Podcast.
Thanks for having me.
You're here in Kingston taking in Spring Reverb, which is a superb and relatively new music festival. But you're here in our studio to talk about another festival, the inaugural Road Trip Music Festival, which is set to take place September 12th in Down. Before we get to that, I've just learned that you're from Kingston originally.
Yeah.
And that you have a long history here, and maybe you can give us a quick rundown.
The first place I lived, which I haven't been by recently, is just around the corner on Notch Hill Road from the studio. Yeah. So that brought in. I worked at CKLC Radio, a legendary radio station. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. For people listening, radio is a thing where it's in your car and you turn it on, and sometimes you have hosts playing music. I grew up listening to the station. 15, I was, my last year of high school, dragging my ass to class at 9 after doing the midnight to 6 shift. I worked my way up through the station, and it's why I love coming on here and seeing that you guys are still keeping the flame going. And I was sort of at the second wave of Kingston bands. The Hip, the 13 Engines were from Kingston. Sarah Harmer in her first band, Saddle Tramps, would come through, and then she...
You were the first to play Tragically Hip, were you?
I was, yeah. I was going to the shows all the time. Lakeview Manor was a legendary club. I don't know if it's come up on this podcast before, but it was kind of the crucible of rock and roll for Kinks at a certain level. It was sort of like the next level. If you were a Kingston band and actually started to draw audience, the Manor was the place. Stages came a little bit after that and was sort of like the shiny jewel. But the Manor, which was strippers by day. So the radio station used to present shows there, and DJs would go down and intro the band to give the radio station some recognition. I used to go down and intro Tragically Hip shows, even though we weren't presenting the shows. I think I was still underage. And because they're such nice dudes, the band would, anyone needed to have them introduced. Everyone knew who they were coming to see, but those early shows, to the point where, well, there's a couple stories rabbit hole because we're going to talk about Road Trip, but the very first video for Small Town Bring Down, which their crew came in to shoot the video, there was about 12 takes, maybe 6 to track and then 6 live, hype the crowd so that once they edited it all together, because, you know, people were drinking and getting tired, and by take 8, it was like, all right, it's like a dance marathon. Let's go, man, for a short time.
Let's fast forward just a little bit ahead in time. Yeah. How did you get, you know, being, you know, part of the local music scene here in Kingston to the Polaris Music Prize? I'm not sure how many listeners are aware. They probably will be after listening to the intro here, but right. But you're the person behind it. How did the journey go from Kingston to that point?
That was about 87. I think I'd fast forward to about 94 or 93 is when I was kind of getting itchy to leave. I was doing a lot of stuff in Kingston. Mm-hmm. I was working with local bands. When I was at the radio stall then, Homegrown Records. So Canadian Talent Initiatives, the CRTC requires it of radio stations. Right. You can either send money into a factor fund or the station can spend money doing their own projects. So I put my hand up for that. The first one we did was called was 4 Bands Live. Mm-hmm. See if I can remember them. Pariahs, The Shakers, White Lies? It'll come to me. And the second one, I started a Friday show called Demo Listen. And so I encouraged artists or their home recordings, or even if it was a studio recording, we'd still play it. And we'd just do like a quick, you know, sneak Kingston band. So the Inbreds, that radio play. And then Juice, Mike Gurgis was involved in that. I think we ended up playing that. And then we compiled a record of all the best. I think we had a contest with a winner. I don't remember what happened. But the artwork, we did that with the Kingston Whig Standard. The artwork for the album was done by Peter Quaife Belleville. And Therese Greenwood, who was a writer at Kingston Whig Standard, was also covering local music scenes. So she found out about this little story on him, and so turns out he's an airbrush artist, and so we got him to do the album artwork. If I have a copy, I'll send
it. Totally. Yeah.
So I was starting to get involved in working with a band called The Pariahs at the time, co-managing, I should say, and that was sort of like broadcasting magic of that. The draw for me was always music and always working closer. Then I left around 93 to work for a small independent record label called Kinetic Records. Mm-hmm. But we put out the Mahone's first record. I started as a promo and publicity person, so trying to get songs on the radio, media coverage. But really, A&R was my goal, was what I ended up doing. By default, terrible ears.
For our listeners' sake, what's the role of an A&R person?
It's a bit of an outdated term. It stands for Artist and Repertoire. Dates back to the 30, you had songwriters and you had singers, and it wasn't until the 60s with the Beatles and their own material that was always separate. So the A&R person worked for the record company. They found a singer who was, you know, had a great voice, songs for them to sing, and that whole publishing industry fed into that. So it morphed into something else in the 60s, 70s, 80s, 90s, and then it was just more about supporting them. In my case, even commissioning music videos as well, too. So,
right.
Yeah. So I did that for Kinetic, and then a job came open at Warner Music for A&R. I ended up getting that, and so I was doing major label A&R for a few years. Towards the end of that time, I started with what I thought was a dream job when I took it. I'm like, I'm gonna be here till 5 nights a week. Like you do. But what they don't tell you is most of the bands you see aren't very good, because you're really sifting through a lot of stuff to get to the good stuff. So it actually kind of takes it. And then there's a struggle to sign stuff that you think is really good. And the struggle comes from a bunch of different internal and external forces. And especially at that time, towards the end of my time at Warner Music, which would have been about 2000, 2001, that was around the explosion in Canada. Mm-hmm. So I was very early into artists like Tegan and Sarah, Metric, Broken Social Scene, Arcade Fire, The Deers, Chaos. There was just a bunch of artists commercial to the powers that be at the time. Mm-hmm. And you really kind of all these mergers were going on, really kind of had to make the case for signing them, and usually failed. The other thing that was happening is the artists were becoming way more savvy. Mm. They're like, we do not need to sign a Canadian major label deal to for the world. We'll get deals all over the place. So that kind of planted the seed for Polaris.
Right.
Told you it was a long story.
No, that's right.
Which, well, the energy of all this creativity that's happening, I thought it was through the major label system. It is not. I'd been following the Mercury Prize in the UK for some time, and one day it just, you know, just hit like a lightning bolt. If this works in the UK, we already have a Giller Prize for Fiction in Canada, which helps sell books, mm-hmm. and maybe a similar filter could work. I got the idea around 2002 and worked on it for 4 years before we launched.
Typical award, you know, the Polaris Music Prize, it's albums, but based on artistic merit. How has that shaped the way you listen to music, and does that same philosophy influence how you think about curating?
That is one of the most... Very good. Like when Polaris started, it was meant to kind of be like a consumer filter, really into music. Not your... This is for people who turn it up, who pay attention, who don't stay in their lane in terms of genre, mm-hmm. and are curious and interested in other stuff, mm-hmm. and will just wants to hear stuff that they like, which, you know, you always mm-hmm. have to listen to something for the first time. Yeah, and then yeah. there's listeners who are curious and want to seek. And so Polaris, the audience is for the seekers. Mm-hmm. And there will always be things, I think, even though I think what we build has a solid foundation, there will always be things on it that people are familiar with. And there will be things on it where you're like, I have never heard of this. But mm-hmm. because it's in that Polaris brand, it's like a trust for selecting it, they will check it out. Something that is just listed on the list. And mm-hmm. I hear it from people all the time still. So it kind of taught me, especially as it went on, that diversity of musical expression thing. I came from things at very narrow target, commercial rip top 40 radio. Although things would, that was the beauty of top 40. Things can still sneak through that you're like, how is this popular? This is not formulaic. But those are always the things that sneak through. Mm-hmm. And to GAC and Jeremy Dutcher and a bunch of these out that were, you know, you're not going to hear them on the radio, mm-hmm. but that doesn't make them any less powerful. And that's helped inform building the road trip curation. Now, I've passion is Virginia Clark, who I hope is known to most of your listeners/viewers.
I'm sure she is.
We in curating was Virginia's. I probably have veto power, but I never used it because, you know, she's been in promotion for and is really
good. I get the sense, and maybe it's through your experience as an A&R person, but I think you described it as, you know, sifting through the the sand, and it's almost like you're a musical prospector to, you know, find those nuggets in there somewhere and bring those to the attention. And I feel like when I looked at the oh, that's interesting,
mm-hmm.
you know, and, you know, now that you're describing your approach to the Polaris Music Prize, it all makes sense to me.
Yeah, I think it's important to Virginia, too. She's not here. It's important to both of us that we have the variety, the range. There isn't just one style. As others in a mass market situation might believe that people's tastes are narrow. We think they're quite broad, and we think they're quite open to hearing a soul rap hip-hop artist like Jacoby next to a rock, next to Katie Tupper, who is basically like this sultry soul presence. She's amazing. I saw her a few weeks ago. You got your local artists who we get to talk about, and it should take you on a journey, I think. Mm-hmm. I already have in my mind the between artists playlist that's going to go on from one thing to the next.
Nice.
So
it's amazing that you're thinking about those details.
You know, I go to shows all the time. I get bored easy, not at shows where they're amazing, but one thing that really speaks to me is some of it can be subtle, some of it can be overt, but you do want people to walk away going, that was time well spent.
Yeah.
The money's one thing. We're in a time economy now. We have such a fire hose of options to spend our time. We can't handle it all.
Yeah,
we need people to case or your sense of adventure or your sense of curiosity. I'm not the first line of curation for this, and neither is Verge. We pay attention to other people who make the same selections, the same choices. Mm-hmm. And you sort of have your people that you trust, or this radio host, or this journalist, they've never done me wrong. They've always suggested something that I end up liking, and so I wanted to turn other people onto that.
Right. Okay, that's interesting to know that that's how that works. Well, yeah. You just described yourself as someone who gets bored easily. So when Downtown Kingston approached you with the idea of creating this new festival on the heels of the Limestone City Blues Festival,
sure.
You know, what made that opportunity interesting or appealing enough for you to get involved?
Well, it was Verge who first turning over that ground. I should elaborate. I get bored easily when things are boring.
Yeah, yeah.
And a lot of things are boring. There's a lot of live people haven't fully thought through the experience they're relaying. People are, again, giving you time out of their finite amount of time.
Mm-hmm.
And I kind of tell artists this. It's not about the money you're collecting from them. And hopefully mm-hmm. you get to a stage where you are collecting money. It's about, and so whatever it is you're trying to express, just put everything into that, right? And mm-hmm. and that boredom would come, and that's what helped with A&R is,
yep.
Well, there must be a reason I'm bored. Now, I did end up signing a band that did very well, and I was super bored the first time I saw them. I must have been tired.
I want to ask you, but I won't.
Yeah, yeah. I'll tell you later. But so to answer your question, so Verge told me about mm-hmm. that they were thinking of doing this, and I'm like, And I said, well, I don't want to step in on your relationship, but I have time. I'll build something to guide their choices.
Mm-hmm.
So we did a little bit of market, talk to other festivals around, get best practices on timing and experience and timeline and curation and all of these things. And I think it was all stuff we kind of already confirmed by other more successful festivals. And Verge herself had been doing Wolf Island Festival for a number of years, so she had hands-on experience there. Other than that, we got input from Blues Fest and just a number of other festival and live booking folks, agent folks. So that's what we presented to them, and they loved it. We even came up with the name.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
I want to ask you about the name. In a minute, my questions I wanted to know about the name, but you know, the Limestone City Blues Festival had a lot of history, and its audience was aging and attendance was declining, but how do you honor the spirit of that audience or the event itself while also building something that feels fresh and future-facing? Or was it more of a blank slate?
It is more of a blank slate. I think there's certainly a core of the Blues Fest audience, and I'd been a couple times, and you know, it was really of live music, and they love gathering. So that spirit of it, yeah, we really obviously want. We sort of part ways. You know, there's a definition of a certain kind of music, and then stepping outside of that can either be great, like Blues Fest in Ottawa, mm-hmm. and embraced, mm-hmm. or not embraced because people, you know, want what the thing presented. So it's a tricky thought. So a clean slate is what Downtown wanted, and so we built something based.
Described as a multi-genre music festival, what drove that decision that you were just talking? What drove that decision to intentionally break that music festival paradigm?
It was part and part from Verge and my belief that, again, people themselves are not as narrow in their tastes as media wants them to be so that they can advertise to them directly. We don't traffic to be exploited. We see them as people who have diverse beliefs, values, and are super curious about things that they may not be familiar with.
Mm-hmm.
Not that we are going with complete unknowns. That's a ref artist that people have heard of who can draw people to it. But once you have the day and you can give them you can give them more choices in the buffets right there beside all the things.
What makes that balance work? Because there's, like you said,
we'll find out.
Yeah. we have festivals are anchored around, you know, one or two big name headliners. And here, I think with Road Trip, you've mixed, you know, some familiar emerging artists with some local or regional favorites. And when I saw the lineup, you know, I thought, oh, that's an interesting mix.
One thing Verge and I discussed very early on was we're not going to book anything or suggest booking anything that we haven't experienced live ourselves.
Right. Okay.
And I think Gabriel Jacoby being live, but I said, you know, it's one thing to look at Spotify numbers and these types of things, but let's look at YouTube numbers and let's look at YouTube performances, because what we're trying to do is build a live mm-hmm. and that quickly gains a rep and connection. We're in this with massive social media followings, and then you put them on a stage, and really they just should have stayed on social media. And a lot of times the audience stays on social media. They don't come out
right.
to see it. So there really has to be a dedication to live performing. When you see Katie Tupper, she connects directly. It's one of those artists you think is singing to you, even though she's singing to everyone else.
There. Awesome.
To me, that's the key. We'll see what happens.
This episode of Kingston Live is brought to you by Grand Onstage. Grand Onstage takes you beyond the regular Kingston Grand Theater experience. It's a subscription option that gives you access to pre-sale tickets, the best prices, and the best seats. A package starting at just 4 performances. Want to bring friends? Tickets 2. And if your plans change, just exchange your tickets for another performance. Tickets for individual performances and subscriptions for the Grand Onstage season are on sale.
It's a one-day journey of musical discovery. The first ever Road Trip Music Festival. Saturday, September 12th in downtown Kingston. Featuring Peach Pit, Katie Tupper, Gabriel Jacoby, and local favorites like Casadores. Food, shopping, and community in downtown Kingston. Road Trip Music Festival. Tickets and details at kingstonlive.ca.
You just mentioned that you were involved in naming the festival. Road Trip implies maybe a journey or a destination. What story were you
hoping? It's a bit more mercurial than that. I think the idea was for downtown was to attract people to Kingston. And 8 out of the 10 were based on... one was a Sarah Harmer song title, and then we had Road Trip. Road Trip has, you know, there's the festival, and that's the thing they want to grow over time. You can be taken on a musical trip. There's the camaraderie of hanging out with your friends. There's always music on a road trip in your car. You sort of say the name and it immediately conjures up some stuff, and it's all set around gathering and music. The trip part, though, is also like, we're going to take you on a little trip. We're going to, like, this isn't, we want to offer something different. There's a lot of markets the size of Kingston who put on festivals. Mm-hmm. And they do the same 5 or 6 artists that summer for all of the different places. Same version of something that's happening somewhere else. We wanted to make something that was unique to Ontario so that people might, oh, well, that's different than the lineup that's happening in my hometown. And I've heard Kingston's nice at the end of the summer, so let's go check it out.
Yeah. For those who might be curious about Road Trip Music Festival but might be undecided, what would you say to encourage them to check?
You got Jacoby, you've got Katie Tupper, you've got Casador, arguably Kingston's most popular current rock band.
I would say.
Yeah. Like, there's your main stage. That's a hell of a main stage.
Yeah.
If I'm speaking to people outside of Kingston, I'm like, that's worth getting in your car and going. If it's getting on whatever bus, coming downtown. If you don't know or haven't heard of any of these bands, we know who we're talking about. Yeah. And it's just, there's a little kind of something for everyone. There's down, and that's where the rest of the lineup comes into play. And so it's just a good day to spend the whole day downtown.
Yeah. You know, in a market like Kingston, sometimes new is great. And sometimes people will check it out. And sometimes new is like, I give it a few years.
Yeah, I haven't heard of this. I know that can be a Kingston thing sometimes. It's increasingly harder for people to get out of their house, but people aren't just O's and ones on the internet. They actually should blood, and you should go hang out with them.
Yeah,
and the more of you there are, the better the vibes. So that's hopefully what we end up building. I hear from a lot of people that once we announced it and they knew that I was involved, were like, okay.
Yeah.
And these are people who may have been somewhat aware of Limestone City Blues Fest, but passed by. So when you say to me, Kingston really needs this, I better see. But I make no threats. I think we are not picking artists who are necessarily like challenging.
Mm-hmm.
Polaris... just to differentiate, Polaris can sometimes pick some challenging artists that aren't for everyone. And our approach with that was like, well, this is what people who listen to a lot of music, this is what spoke to them. And those reasons are as different as the people who make those determinations.
Mm-hmm.
So Tanya Tagak wins the, okay, I'm going to go check it out. And then they go, oh my God, what is this? And some people respond to it in super positive ways because they've never heard anything like it before. Other people just can't get their brains around it, and that's totally fine. Yeah, yeah. This is not what we're doing with Road Trip. Mm. We're delivering a wide range and styles, but we're not trying to overtly challenge audiences. This is going to be a good vibes day. And
worked with Virginia on the Virginia Clark Flying V Productions. Some of our listeners would know Virginia as someone who's played a huge role in bringing great live music to this. But for the listeners who may not know Virginia's broader impact, how would you describe her importance in the region's music scene?
Virginia, from Walt Kingston, she's also beloved in some of the music center powers, within some of the music center powers in Toronto. Mm-hmm. And so people love working with her. She's a rarity amongst promoters in that she's really concerned with audience experience and artist experience. And I think if off of those two principles, it's really hard to fail. Mm-hmm. As far as I can tell, she's never gotten into concert promotion to get rich. Mm-hmm. And there are others who quite obviously do, but just to do a sustainable respect, treats the artist with respect.
I think that comes through in the shows that she books and promotes.
Yeah. And so when someone signs an artist from, you know, Mariel Buckley, who will be on one of the...
That's exciting.
Super exciting. Mm-hmm. From Calgary. Yeah. People working for her was like, well, you know, we're routing a tour from Toronto to Ottawa, or Toronto to Montreal, call Verge. Mm-hmm. They might call KPP as well, too. So that's, you've got two super strong, mm-hmm. reliable promoters in this town, which is a gift. Mm-hmm. Road Trip. Go to Road Trip. Go to as many shows as possible. You've got a good thing going on here.
That's, from the outside, your partnership with Virginia on the Road Trip Music Festival, it kind of feels like, you know, a national perspective meeting a very local sort of boots on the ground.
Yeah, and you know, there was a couple of strong voices in those consultations we had trying to put the festival concept together, where this one quote from one of the, I think it was Russell, but said, the beating heart of your festival are local bands. That really stuck with me, and I'm like, well, we're good. We got Verge. You know, she knows the scene. She sees audiences develop over time with some of these artists. So that's super important, curation of the lineup.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's good. That's good. Local's important to us here, and we created Kingston Live in a way to be a platform for local artists, giving them a home field advantage, I say. I
like
to say. Mm-hmm. And it's good that the festival's like, you know, a typical grassroots, you know, hey, we started this ourselves kind of thing, are looking at opportunities to include local acts as well. So
as long as I'm involved, as long as Verge is involved, there will never not be local bands as a centrifugal force of the thing.
His Music Prize, though, you helped create this national conversation around Canadian recorded music. With Road Trip, though, you're helping shape a live music experience. And just from building, you know, what's arguably become a Canadian music institution, the Polaris Music Prize, that you've applied to Road Trip.
At the beginning of this, which is, and something which I talked to you about Verge, is treat the audience with respect. And part of treating the audience with respect is not thinking that their taste and that they will only accept things that they already know about. Draw people out. Polaris out the best album. People would confuse that and say it's about the best indie album or it's about the best emerging artist. And I would correct them and go, no. The Weeknd, his first record and a few records after that have been nominated. It's about the best album.
Right.
And Polaris is about the conversation itself. It's less about, I would say we pick a winner just to hook you into the conversation about what you check out. The short list, and then hopefully you check out the long list.
Yeah.
And then your whole listening experience has been enriched by this whole exercise. I think we take a similar approach. Polaris was sponsored. So there's a lot of sponsors and funders that helped get it off the ground. We were less reliant on the ticket sales to have it become sustainable. Taking the spirit of that curatorial idea, that travels with me everywhere into Road Trip. But Road Trip does have to be a little more commercial in its appeal, bottom line. But at the event itself, our gala that we ran every year, was just trying to take a look at similar things that happen in that space, award shows or industry / cultural events, and go, okay, we see what else other people do and how they present it. What can we do this to the event? They go, huh, I enjoyed that, and I've never been to anything like it. That's how you build a cohesion and an adherence to the event, because people are getting something that they don't get anywhere else, right, or in their minds. So it's building that uniqueness of spirit and mission and presentation and audience, a memorable experience that they'll want to repeat.
Yeah, it's interesting with the Road Trip Music Festival, you know, the audience is both local, and as you mentioned, there's a desire to draw an audience from out of market here for the festival as well. And so I feel like it's got something that you've got some fantastic acts that maybe have never played Kingston before or have rarely played Kingston. And then the whole thing takes place outdoors, you know, which is, am I right? These are outdoor.
For now.
Yeah.
We discussed as it grows, if it grows, mm-hmm. you want it to grow sustainably. So there will definitely be a chance to add those tentacles as we these stages in other parts of Kingston.
But downtown Kingston's beautiful in the summertime, that's, I think that offers an experience, and most people who live here would know that, but you know, if you're not from Kingston and you haven't been, you know, to experience this caliber of music in a live setting outdoors in downtown Kingston mm-hmm. is an experience.
And it's setting.
Yeah.
That's the other thing. It's one of the best town squares in Canada as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah.
And that will leave an impression. You'd be like hanging out there, and it's not, you know, it'll be for main stage artists. It'll be a good hang.
Yeah.
And if we do the presentation in a compelling way, yeah, it's a tight little vibe fest.
For someone to look at the lineup and maybe they might recognize a few names, but there's two stages.
There will be four stages, I believe. Yeah.
Four stages. There's a lot going on.
Yeah, there'll be three stages on, and then the one main stage.
What would be your advice to someone in terms of how they might approach the day?
Hydrate, sunscreen,
yep,
a nice hat, plan meals. There's plans for food on site, but also it's downtown Kingston. We've got some amazing restaurants, so try and build in. You'll be able to see every single band, because you do need to eat. And check out as much as possible.
So don't come downtown for the last hour of the main stage. Plan this as a day outing.
Holy, yeah. I think we start at 1 or 2 around that time.
Yeah.
And then, you know, it's Kingston. It's downtown. Mm-hmm. Take a break. You can anywhere. You can come back. It's such a great setting. Get some ice cream. White Mountain.
Yeah.
They did not pay me for that.
Which is, you know, you kind of implied maybe there's a larger opportunity. I know this is year one, right?
Yeah.
No one wants to, you know, but looking beyond the first year, what opportunities, what do you think Road Trip Music Festival could become if Kingston really embraces it?
Really, there can be additional stages. It can be additional days. It can turn into a club festival because, you know, you're 10 or 11. So people will want somewhere to go. And they may want more music. It's really simple, just growing it out organically. If it means adding, it's adding other staging areas. It means adding things that are not music. So, you know, arts, bringing more arts elements to it. I know there's other things like that and things we haven't even thought of. And maybe what even happens is people come to the Downtown Kingston organization and go, I have an idea. I went to Road Trip. It was great. Hmm. Here's a thing maybe we can do. That would be wonderful.
Yeah. Yeah. Adding different dimensions to it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Very cool. Well, I know, but on a personal note, I feel like I have to ask you, you know, you've had a national view of Canadian music for so long, for many, many years. What do you hear, see, or sense in Canadian music right now that excites you?
Well, I mean, let's look at Angers de Poitrain. Like that is, Quebec just happens to be the place that was picked as the landing pad from this band from outer space.
Mm-hmm.
So we kind of lucked out. That's exciting. And this isn't a scoop for anyone. By now, most people have heard of it, seen the videos, but that's a Canadian in that it's weird.
Mm-hmm.
It's super groovy.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, I think people's reaction is like, I shouldn't be into this, but I am. And there are a lot of, you know, they're not the only ones to be kind of in that weirdo math music area. But hopefully it encourages other people to forget about and like with Polaris, we always wanted to encourage artistic ambition, mm-hmm. not marketplace ambition. Because marketplace ambition, whenever it's engineered, it's terrible. So it's losing its soul a bit. I have nothing against hugely commercial music. I love a lot of it. But the artistic ambition is the thing that really, I think, is really exciting and pushes art and music forward. So I'm interested mm-hmm. not just in how they managed to sustain a career after mm-hmm. this. I think they should make them with their origin story and stuff. Whenever a band like that comes along, the people go, nothing is like this. I don't know what I think I like it. A bunch of other bands form or artists feel mm-hmm. Compelled to take it up because it just inspires them so much.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
So I'm interested in seeing what these guys inspire.
Who knows?
We don't know.
We don't know. Yeah.
They are asexual. I'll just wait till the next Polaris long list comes out. Like that's right. Really the yeah. answer to your question. Because the people who are picking that, mm-hmm. they listen to a lot of stuff and they go, check this out.
Yeah.
And that's
really... It's been a must read for me for years and years.
Oh, amazing.
I still
love
Heap Who's Clouds in my Apple Music library because
nice.
That was the first, I think the very first winner. Oh, Palette, right?
Yeah,
that's right. Yeah, it's still in there. It's amazing.
Well, it was such a pivotal moment for a lot of reasons because...
Remember that first year?
The second really? Year. I feel like Harmer's first year, Kanon, Wolf Parade. There were some known artists on that list. I think he was like the least known of all the who he was because he was doing a lot of arranging for mm-hmm. for others. So it made a lot of people go, oh, and huh, and who, and what, and oh my God, it's called Heap Who's Clouds.
Yeah.
These people are unafraid.
I feel like that's every year for Polaris Music. That's my reaction every year. It's like, who, what?
Yeah.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
And then you're down the rabbit hole. I don't really have any other questions. There's one question we tend to ask. You know, we got into this thinking, oh, maybe we can squeeze a year and we are way into this deep and there just seems to be no bottom to this. But what is it about Kingston? I mean, we are huge advocates. I had a Kingston seem to recognize that there's something special going on here. We've been looking for the answer to, you know, what makes Kingston such an amazing, you know, musical city.
I don't know. Mm. I have theories. Mm. None of them have been proven correct because you can't. But on a really important side, that's what we hope this festival can help do. And I know we've got, it's already been doing this kind of thing for years, building community. It's a really great thing. Helps unify whatever it is in the soil that creates writers. Mm-hmm. But I think it's a few things to answer your question. I think there's the kind of intellectual influence of the universe, a slower pace to the way of life. When you're not as rushed, you notice more things. So it's no to live in Kingston. There's a lot of creatives that live in Kingston. And so your opportunity for observation and ever greater.
Right.
I mean, you can do that anywhere, I suppose. Well, there's the natural beauty. There are the ghosts of Kingston. Mm. And if you've never been on a Kingston ghost tour, I highly recommend it.
I have, actually. Yeah.
Yeah. I think that has some sort of, you know, the early hip shows I was talking about off the top, going to the Lakeview Manor. And maybe it's like this elsewhere. But I've never lived anywhere else but here in Toronto, so it's hard for me to judge. But certainly in Toronto, when you go to see a band level of popularity, I've never experienced what I saw in those early days with the Hip, where you would have rich kids, profs kids, people who worked at the prison, bikers,
yeah.
conservatives, left wings. Like, it was such at least a microcosm of white Canada anyway. And everybody got on. Mm-hmm. Actuous opportunity. And Gord's lyrics were so kind of weirdly intellectual, you know, and people were responding to that from all walks of Kingston life. You know what? There is one other place that I've actually, now that I think of it, that I've experienced that is in going to South by Southwest very early on in the mm-hmm. 90s and saw it grow into the behemoth it sort of ended up mm-hmm. becoming. But mm-hmm. at the very early days, that place attracted freaks and intellectuals, but Texans. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So there's a parallel in Kingston. My friend JJ of the North all the time. Mm-hmm, and I think there's something to it. I think more can be done to live up to the promise of Kingston being a music city. I know people are working really hard at it. I was just at an event last night with Moira and the folks at the Kingston Music Office. And a lot of cities of this size have a music office that operates as theirs does.
We're thankful for the music office.
Yeah, 100%. Those are the conditions, but I think a history of musical excellence. It's not just the hip, but you've had a lot of really great, impactful rock bands come from this town.
That's right. There's a whole legacy that, you know, predates the hip, here in Kingston, too, that, we haven't talked enough and explored enough on.
I want to have you back in. Talk about the history of Kingston bands.
Absolutely. That would be a cool episode.
I did a lot of work back in the day, but was also coming out of when I talked about the hip being like second wave of Kingston bands. The first wave was like the Blushing Brides. There was a bit of a scene, but it was until the hip came along, it was mostly cover band to start for sure, but so were the Beatles.
Podcast. And love that you're from Kingston and...
It's all good. Yeah. I have to go do mentor sessions now.
Cool. Apparently. Well, we'll let you get to it.
This has been Kingston Live. If you've enjoyed this podcast, or subscribe on your platform of choice. For show listings, artist info, and all things Kingston music, check out kingstonlive.ca. Kingston Live was produced in Kingston by Soundwise. Hosted by Rob Howard. Voiceover and technical writing and research by Peter Sanfilippo. Executive producer, Rob Yu. Email us at podcast@kingstonlive.ca.
On months, Gale's Game Day makes its triumphant return to CFRC. Tune in on Sunday, August 30th at 6:45 p.m. to catch all the action that makes you stand up and say... OMG! This is Canada's most exhilarating sports broadcast.
And it's picked off, picked off, picked off!
This is Canada's gold standard of football action.
The Gales stop the Griffins!
This is Gales Game Day. And it can only be found on CFRC BAM.
Release Radar, in partnership with the Kingston Music Office, we're pleased to present the final single from local jazz musician Oscar Evans, Mutations. 3 a.m. is a high-energy song using danceization that will keep you grooving until the full album is released in September. Field Evans on Instagram to stay up with the musician wanting social media promotion and airplay on CFRC's channels. Complete the Release Radar submission form on the Kingston Music Office website or via visit kingston.music on Instagram. In the meantime, stream 3 a.m. by Oscar Evans on your favorite platform. And enjoy it here with us now on CFRC.
We'll be right back. A nightmare. When the workplace is hectic. When your boss calls you in. When nature isn't on your side. There's only one thing you can do.
But no need to wake up the neighbors. Tune in every Mushhead Progressions, where we play an hour of cool jazz to help you relax after a long day. Again, that's Shed Progressions every Monday night at 11 p.m. on CFRC 101.9 FM.
We're not afraid to get a little funky.
Kingston?
Stop by and visit our programs and talk to our staff to find out how our staff will support you.
So many things we like best are golf.
Doing crowd name.
I like doing everything at EAF. We just love Extended Family.
Visit us at fkingston.com.
Come on down to EFK, located at 660 Baggett Street, for a great time. Be a part of our extended family.
Come to Extended Family. Come and have some fun.
Salam, Anin, and welcome to The Black Alternative every Wednesday at 3 p.m. I'm your host, Noel. Head shakers, hair throwers, and rock out fans. Let's get right into it.